Welcome. Since the last time we did a podcast, we have come up with a name. We're calling it A Presence on Your Journey. As you know, the mission statement for Community Autism Resources is a place to start a presence on your journey. So we took the last four words, A Presence on Your Journey, and that is the name of our podcast now. It's A Presence on Your Journey. So welcome. And today we're going to deal with advocacy and how to advocate working with legislators to get the things that you need. And our guest,
Beth Moran Liuzzo,
is the Director of Family Support for the Southeast Region. Beth, welcome to our podcast.
Thank you for having me, Dennis.
Just kind of to start, if you can tell us a bit about your background.
Sure. Well, I've been with the Department of Developmental Services for 33 years. I'm almost embarrassed to say. My background, I have a master's in social work and a law degree. But I got into the field because I had a sister-in-law who had intellectual disabilities. And so I was drawn to working with folks in this field. Presently, I am the, as you mentioned, the Director of Family Support in the Southeast Region. And I view family support as being probably the most important service that we can provide to families. And so I'm always excited when we can do new things and we can help families just with some very simple services like respite and flexible funding or social and recreational kinds of activities. But I see family support really as being the cement that helps to keep the family together. So as I said, I've been around a long time. I was an area director for some time. In addition to doing family support, I also am the eligibility manager in the Southeast. So I get to see people right at the front door as they're coming in for services. So a variety of different things, and it's a job that I absolutely love. So.
And have you had any background experience with dealing with legislatures or with advocacy? What kind of advocacy experiences have you had?
Right, well, interesting question. I did take 2 years out of my service with the Department of Developmental Services and actually worked at the State House. So I was a legislative aide to a representative from Brockton at the time. So I saw the workings of the State House from the inside, which I think was very interesting. And I think that helps when I talk to parents about things that they should do with their legislator, because I was actually the one answering the calls from families at the time. So advocacy as a state worker, a lot of what we do is really behind the scenes, you know, encouraging the families and providers to do the advocacy that we really can't do directly because we're paid by the Commonwealth. So mine is more of a behind the scenes kind of training or education.
So you bring a lot to the table, which would be good for listeners who tune into this podcast, because we really want to get some tips and some good ideas. So I think having the behind-the-scenes background will be very, very good for this podcast.
I hope so.
So I'd like to start with the question, why is it important for people to get to know their legislators and to tell their story? And how important is it?
I think it's essential. I think the most important thing that a legislator can know is the person and the family. You know, it's one thing for them to hear stories from the state, from the departments, where we're constantly trying to pitch our needs and showing statistics and those things. But the most important thing is when a legislator can put a face to the name. So certainly if, you know, the families, even to go to the State House, to make an appointment or go to the sessions that they have in their local communities, be a presence. Let the legislator know who you are by name. Bring a picture of your child if you can't bring your son or daughter, or bring them in person. That has an enormous effect on individuals in the legislature.
Along those lines, there are a lot of parents who are very busy and don't necessarily have a lot of time on their hands. So besides visiting the State House, what other things can parents do who are not in a position to always travel to the State House?
It is tough to get into Boston. We all know, especially the parking is horrible, so it's difficult for families to do that. As I mentioned, the legislators oftentimes do have events in their own community, so if it's easier for them to get to that event in person, I would say that would be the first thing. Telephone calls are logged by the legislative aides, so it's important if parents make a call, state their case, give a little history about who they are, who their child is, what their need is. Emails, you know, we're in the electronic age now, so certainly emails are tracked on a daily, probably hourly basis by the legislative aides. And certainly, you know, you can take the old route and just write a letter. All of those things are read by the legislators. They're read by their aides. They're sorted into whatever the issues are. And it's something that the legislators definitely pay attention to.
And that's very important. Can you talk a bit about cultivating relationships with legislators? Because it's not just a one-shot deal.
No, it absolutely isn't. You know, the old adage, the squeaky wheel gets the grease. It's true. The more contact that you have with the legislator, the more important your need is, your cause is. And so, drop an email every now and then, make a phone call, send the letter, make the visit. It certainly isn't a one-time thing. It's something that you have to stay in touch with the legislators, because we also have to remember, you know, we're in this field and we think what we do is the most important thing. And I truly believe that. But the legislators are also dealing with a lot of other groups that are coming at them for roads, for education, for pension reform, you name it. There are all kinds of people out there who are trying to get the time of the legislators. And so we need to make sure that our needs are in the forefront as well. And so the more we can be in touch with legislators, telling our stories, sending the picture, sending a story in writing, the better.
What are some other ways, like I know if you can talk a bit about district offices and the role that that can play?
District offices are essential for the legislators, just for the reasons that you stated earlier. You know, getting into the State House is difficult. People don't have the time to make the drive into Boston. So legislators do typically have offices in their communities. I know Friday was always the big out-of-office day for the legislators, but often they have meetings in the evenings. There are phone calls. Most of them have their home phones available to their constituents as well. So, you know, certainly try to meet them at their local office if you can, or make the call to their home phone if that's available to you. Again, even to see them at an event. You know, the legislators are known for being at ribbon cuttings or parades or whatever it is. Be there. You know, I remember a story of a mother that I worked with in the Boston area many years ago who had three children on the autism spectrum. And she lived in and went to church where the Speaker of the House lived. And she used to bring her children to Mass every Sunday and sit in front of the Speaker so that he knew who her sons and daughters were. And that was critical, and it made a difference in her life.
I'm wondering if you can maybe give us some tips of how a good phone call, what would be an example of a good phone call that someone can make to a legislator? Just things like, you know, getting into letter writing, or, you know, things like making it short, or little tips that you can give.
Well, the most important thing, always make sure that if, either in the phone call or in a letter, that your name, your telephone number, your address are clear. Again, everything is tracked in the legislator's office. When you call in, I would, you know, state your case, state your cause. Are you calling about the budget? Is there some line item in particular that you're interested in? It's good to point out if you know what that line item is, or if there's a bill that's pending that you'd like the legislator to vote on. If you know the number of the bill, or the, at least the name of the bill, if you know it's in committee, or you know when it's coming up for a vote, any information like that, if you have that, it's important, I think, to state that up front, that you're calling because you'd like them to support such and such. You could keep it brief, but if they begin to ask questions because they're interested, you know, be prepared to stay on the line, because that means that they want to do some more research on whatever it is that you're calling in about. Same thing with the letter, you know, keep it brief, but make sure that you include the important information in it. Again, if it's about the budget or a bill or whatever, be specific as to what it is that you're asking about. It's also important, again, to tell a little personal story about who you are and who your child is, your adult child. You want that legislator to really connect with the reason you're calling, because you have a son or daughter with an intellectual disability who's on the spectrum, and you want them to be able, again, to put a name with that face. So you always want to tell a little bit about your personal story when you make the phone call.
Because they have so many issues that they're dealing with, so many things that it kind of helps put a face or to the whole situation, to the issue.
Exactly, exactly. I can't tell you the number of calls legislators get on a daily basis. And it, like you said, it's about everything. And so it's really important to make it personal. So they'll walk away and they'll say, oh, you know, I heard from Beth, and now I know why she's calling, because she has a child who's, you know, 18 and is on the autism spectrum, and she's really concerned about this bill. So it's really important to tell the personal stories. And when you send a letter, you know, again, send a picture. You know, make it really personal. This is my child. This is my family. So that they, again, can really connect with you.
I wonder if you could take, without us getting too technical, because I had also gone through some legislative advocacy training myself, and I don't want us to get too technical, but I wonder if you can maybe talk about how the legislative process works with respect to the budget. We know that the fiscal year starts from July 1st to June 30th, but there's a whole process that goes into that.
Right. The budget is really a 12-month process. We never stop. The governor releases his budget in January, actually, I believe.
Today
is the day, right?
As we're doing this. Right.
Good timing on our part, Dennis. We call it the House 1 budget, and that's the governor's budget. So before that's released, every department in the state has to make a pitch to the governor's office as to what the priorities are. And that starts really in July. You know, we start thinking from July to December, what is it that we need to focus on as a department? You know, where do we need to readjust things? This year as a department, I believe we're going to go in and ask for an increase in funding to family support, because throughout the last several years, we've taken major cuts to family support. Prior to being able to make that request, we had to do a lot of research, come up with numbers, you know, show the impact that it has on families. And as we're doing that, every department in the state's doing the same kind of thing. It gets to the governor's office sometime in December, and they sift through all of that, and then they make the recommendations in the budget that's coming out today. Once that budget is released, that's really just the beginning of the cycle, because then we have the Senate and the House that will both release their own versions of the budget, and then there'll be a conference committee that will come together sometime in the spring, which will look at all the budgets and try to determine what's the best one going forward. And the hope is that by July, we would have a new budget. But oftentimes, we've seen in the state that it's sometime in August, maybe, before we really know what the budget is for the new fiscal year. But so as you can see, it's a 12-month process.
And I know, in fact, the agencies, don't they really start to submit their budget in September, really, before it becomes the governor's House 1 budget in January?
The hope always is to get it in by September. Oftentimes, you know, we do have a delay in getting all of our requests in. But the major requests, certainly, we want them in there by September.
Now, what is that like? I mean, when people hear that you can testify, you know, you envision things like, oh, my God, do I have to go under oath and what is that? So what is that experience like? How long can a testimony be? How short?
You know, I'm not sure if there's an actual time limit on it, and I apologize for not having that answer. But it's really, I suppose it could be an overwhelming experience for somebody who's never done it. But it's typically what you're doing is you're testifying in front of a committee that's interested in the legislation or in the bills that are coming forward or in the budget. So the House Committees on Human Services, that would be the committee that would hear the testimony. And basically, it's you go to the State House. It's good to register beforehand so that they know you'd like to testify orally. You're called up. And at that point, again, you tell your story. You talk about why you're there, what it is you're advocating for, a little personal story about your family, again, always helps. It's not an intimidating process. There's no cross-examination. You may have questions from the legislative committee because they're interested in trying to, you know, get a little bit more information from you. But there's no oath or anything like that that you take. It's a right that we have as a citizen to be able to go and speak our minds in front of the legislative body. And the same thing, if you can't do that orally, you can certainly send written testimony into the committee as well.
How important is getting to know the staffs? Because you're not always going to get to meet with legislators. Even if you go up to the State House on legislative days, which I've participated in numerous times, you're not always going to get to see your representative. So if you can talk about relationship with staff.
Oh, yeah, it's critical. As you said, the legislators, they're busy during the day. They're in meetings, you know, committee meetings, whatever. So to get to know the legislative aide is really important. That person talks to the legislator on a daily basis, probably many times a day, keeping them updated on the calls that are coming in, problems that the constituents are calling about. So to get to know that person on a name-by-name basis, it's very, very important. And typically, at least the ones that I know, they're there because they want to help the constituents as well. They're good people. They're solid people. They're there because they want to make a difference in people's lives. And so they're open to the public really trying to get to know them on a better basis.
I have a question, and I know that you're the director of Family Support for the Southeast Region. Community Autism Resources serves 88 cities and towns. So when you have a large service area, how does an autism center or a center for independent living, any center like that, how can they effectively advocate with such a large service area? I mean, it's hard to get to know 88 representatives, and, well, you don't, I don't mean 88 representatives, right. But With that kind of a service area, how can one effectively advocate with the legislature?
That's where you depend on the parents who are part of your organization. No one organization can do it. So it's really important that we build the community of parents and also collaborate with other providers within our agency. In the Southeast region, in addition to community autism resources, we have 10 family support centers, one in each of our catchment area, a couple of the areas have more than one. So it's important to collaborate with those people as well so that we can build the grassroots organizations that we need. We really have to depend on the numbers of the parents involved. We can't depend on staff. It's just way too overwhelming. Not enough staff and too many issues and causes. So.
And staff, it should also be pointed out, because having worked in the public sector myself, staffs have to be very careful that they're not perceived as lobbying.
Correct.
So that's where your network of parents and consumers really come into play.
Absolutely. And you mentioned the network of consumers, Dennis, and that's something we really should just spend a little bit of time talking about. You know, I do family support, so a lot of my work is with the families. But we have many, many individuals who can speak for themselves. And I think there's nothing more powerful than an individual who may have an intellectual disability or be on the autism spectrum. And for that person to be able to tell their story, I think is extremely powerful. And so we need to build what we call self-advocates, but we need to build a better group, a more powerful group of self-advocates who can tell their own stories.
Yeah, that is very important. In whether it's the budgetary process or even a bill that might be introduced to benefit, you know, the autism community or other aspects of cognitive disability communities, besides the legislative process, if you can talk a bit about getting your story out to the media, because sometimes that can help impact on getting more funding if necessary or getting the kind of bill through that, getting the kind of law that's important. So besides directly with the legislature, maybe if we could talk about the media.
The media is, again, it's a critical piece. I don't know how many people read newspapers anymore. I feel like it's almost a dying breed. But if you can, again, make that connection with a local paper, you know, every town or community has a local paper. And then there are the bigger ones. You know, I live up in the northern part of the region, so we have the Patriot Ledger up in that area. And families who have been able to make a connection with writers, there have been some incredible stories that have been published. And again, that's something that legislators read. Again, it's the electronic age. There are all different kinds of ways. Facebook or, I don't know, the social media is huge. To be able to, again, connect even with the media that way, because all of the newspapers have websites. Media is critical. Letters to the editor, you know, short and sweet, but get your story out.
Right.
If you can find somebody who takes a special interest in your story and can run a byline on that, that's awesome. So yeah, and radios as well. You know, if you can get into a radio station who wants to hear your story.
Talk shows,
absolutely.
Yeah. Well, Beth, I want to thank you very, very much for taking the time to join us today and to talk about some of the tips and some of the strategies that we could use to make things happen to benefit our needs as a community and the strategies for dealing with the legislature and to be effective advocates. Thank you so much for what you do, and thank you for being a part of our podcast today.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure being here, Dennis. I hope it's been helpful.
And I want to remind everybody that the music that was used on A Presence on Your Journey was written by George Winston. Our Executive Director for Community Autism Resources is Barbara Domain, and our technical producer is Nicholas Domain, but ably substituted today by Bob Domain. For more information or to listen to podcasts on demand, this and other podcasts, you can visit our website, and you can also listen on iTunes, but you can visit our website at www.community-autism-resources.com. My name is Dennis Polselli, and thank you for listening.